we welcome you back. Wonderful segment here coming your way. The author of a new book that I just came across that I want to share with you, Peace, Love, and Soul. Behind the scenes of America's favorite dance show, Soul Train Classic Moments, Erica Blount Danois joins me now. And Erica, the first thing I want to do is congratulate you on this, and I appreciate you being here. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Tony. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being on the show.
Share with me how you came to get interested in taking on a project like this.
Well, Soul Train was sort of a staple in our household, like most kids in the 70s. Soul Train, Bandstand, the Jackson 5 cartoons, karate movies. You know, that was all Saturday morning fun. So I watched it religiously and was talking yesterday about how you got some cachet on the playground if you watch Soul Train and you could talk about what happened that Saturday, and you also kind of got shunned if you didn't watch Soul Train and there was talk about what happened on Saturday. During that time period when we did not have the option of taping shows and DVRs and on-demand and all that stuff, it was really appointment TV, so every Saturday I was a fan, and, you know, I grew up in a musical household. My father was a radio DJ, and he worked at a record store, so we had this a massive record collection of all kinds of music. So it was just really an extension, wondering what happened to the show. You know, at some point, probably like most people, I stopped watching it when other shows came on, you know, that were more niche, you know, like MTV, etc. So, you know, I looked for some of the favorite dancers of that time period and found them in the wildest places. One of the Asian dancers who was known for her long hair, she was working at LAX, and, you know, I found some of the most popular ones, like Fred Barry from the show What's Happening. He had passed, but the people that were in the group with him, the Lockers, so people like Tony Basil, did that song, Hey Mickey, She's So Fine, if you remember that. Found a bunch of those folks, and it just kind of grew from there, because once I found the dancers and found out what kind of things they had done after Soul Train, from choreographing for Mick Jagger and Michael Jackson and Rick James to, you know, even dancing for the Queen of England, I just found out all of this other history that, you know, Don Cornelius owned the show and all the other offshoots of Soul Train, from Soul Train Club to a nightclub to Soul Train Records and award shows and all this other stuff. So it just kept kind of growing, and, you know, there it was.
You know, I noticed that in the book, it seems like as you went along, the book kind of wrote itself. But let's go back to the beginning here. And when I say the book kind of wrote itself, I guess that's why it was so hard for me to put down, because I was thinking, you know, this is a chronological deal here, and we all know that the story didn't end too well for Don Cornelius. But before we even go anywhere near that, let's talk about the beginning. Mm-hmm. See, I grew up as a kid in Philadelphia, and, you know, the sounds of Philadelphia was my backdrop and all that stuff. And I'm a Caucasian male, but soul music in that town is such a part of the thread, the late 60s, early 70s, and that is just, you know, you don't realize it at the time. I feel sorry for young people today, because the music that they are calling their own as a part of their soundtrack of their lives, it's not the same as the stuff
not
we grew up
close.
On. It's just,
not even close.
We were so blessed. But let's go back here. Don Cornelius. Don Cornelius is a guy who's sort of aimlessly kicking around Chicago at one point, and you tell his story. He's a cab driver at one point, and he sort of finds his way into radio. Yeah. Share this. It's a great tale.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that he became the person that he did, because, you know, like many people, he was trying to find himself still in his mid-30s. So he had a young family. He had two sons and a wife, and he was just sort of, you know, going from job to job. So he was a police officer, he was a cab driver, he was an insurance salesman, and during a routine traffic stop, he had stopped someone when he was working as a police officer who happened to work at the local radio station, And, you know what Don Cornelius sounds like. So, the radio guy was like, you have an amazing voice. Have you ever thought about radio? And he was like, as a matter of fact, I have. And the guy is a radio DJ. His name is Roy Wood, who worked at WVON in Chicago. And that's sort of how he broke into the media world. And from there, he didn't actually get the chance to be a DJ, and it was something that he had always dreamed about. Like, he would practice in front of the mirror introducing artists like Marvin Gaye as a kid. So it was something that had always been in the back of his mind. But it was a very competitive, as you know, field, and he couldn't get a job as a DJ except when they were sick. So he came up with the concept of doing a dance show and using the template of radio in terms of like interviewing guests and interviewing even people that were just popular in that time period in the culture, so actors, musicians, comedians, etc. And then the style that the DJs had in the 70s, particularly in black radio, the rhyming style and way that they had their signature sign off and all that kind of stuff. So he brought that to TV, or rather to the pilot that he created. In the book, I talk a little bit about the Chicago local show, which was really modest for anybody who remembers UHF TV. And for some kids who grew up with modest means, the antenna that would always break. And it was a black and white station that came on every day after school, and the kids would come home, and Speed Racer came on before it, and then the show came on, and everybody took off immediately because this was the first time that they were seeing themselves on TV. So that was the local program that he created, and then created a pilot from that and chopped it to LA. But the networks were not interested, and so he ended up, opted for syndication and traveled, on his own dime to various cities to sell the show to affiliates.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, his story, here's the truth about Don Cornelius' story, is that most people look at that guy and go, hey, somebody had the idea for this show,
right. And
they got this really tall, cool, smooth black guy who just had the voice and who had the look. No,
right.
No. This is the guy that created it. In fact, you go as far as to point out in your book that when he's first doing it in Chicago, he really doesn't know what he's doing. He knows that he has a vision for this. All
right.
These advertisers. See, I own my own show here locally, my own sports radio show that I do, and I've tried to syndicate some stuff across my state here, and I found myself relating to this guy. But then again, no, because I can't imagine what it was like walking into an advertiser and saying, hey, we want to be the voice of young black America. And they're looking at him like, brother, you've got like six eyes. I mean, they're looking at him like, you're from outer space. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, where would you get that, where would that come from?
Right.
And so Don Cornelius, you paint the picture. Here's a guy that has success in Chicago, but he goes out to L.A. He's got a young family to feed, and he's dying out there at first, right? I mean, he about goes broke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's sort of unheard of in this sort of one-hit wonder, internet sensation society we have now, that someone would have that much vision to say, okay, even when I'm failing and starving and my kids are struggling, I see that, there's something there. And even when he's getting rejected by, networks who don't see it, in reading some of the stuff that he says and take on music, he was way, way, way ahead of his time. So I think that vision helped him to endure when he was talk about him driving in Chicago with no heat in his car and, the worst winters, like he struggling. He paid for that show out of his own pocket, and it ended up being the longest running first run syndicated show in history. Like, who knew?
We already established how it didn't come easily. Another side of his story that I thought was really interesting was that he patterned his show in some respects after American Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
Once his deal starts to take off, Dick Clark, who was the ultimate example of a guy who was restless. You know, Dick Clark created all these TV shows. He had this bandstand thing over here, but he had all this primetime television that he, and Don Cornelius saw him and said, you know, that's opportunity there. I could do some of those things. And yet Dick Clark looked at him and said, wait a second, you're doing something here with this show. You're going to make mine, if I'm not careful, you're going to make mine look rather, if you already haven't, rather boring, rather lame. I want a piece of that. These guys interfaced. Talk about how these two guys interfaced.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's definitely modeled it after Bandstand. Even, you know, the Soul Train Scramble Board was taken or inspired by Rate a Record on Bandstand. And the entire format of the show, really, you know, is similar to Bandstand. It was just a black version of it. And so you're right in that it also, because of the nature of Don Cornelius' personality, was a much hipper version. You know, Dick Clark was this very clean-cut, straight-laced host, and that was sort of the appeal, and it was the appeal for that time period. I think the country had kind of outgrown that sort of image, and Don represented this 70s hip, cool, the clothes, you know, the bell-bottoms, the rhyming style, the afro, the whole, like a new take on what was going on in the country, youth culture and free spirit and counterculture and all that stuff. He was representative of that. And so Soul Train definitely was more innovative, and it also had some of the best in music on the show. Dick Clark had all of the superstars, but there were some that did not make it on Bandstand because, you know, they quote unquote at the top of the charts or what was considered mainstream. So Don had some of the people who Dick Clark was missing on the show, and then he also had the hippest fashion, hippest dancers, and all the other stuff. So it was surprisingly, even to him, something that not just black audiences tuned in, but everybody was watching it because it represented something new. And something that was sort of where the country was moving toward. Dick Clark represented where we had been.
This is where the story gets really good, because Dick Clark does what a lot of moguls do, which is, I see something great.
Yes.
I'm going to go to this guy, and I'm going to buy it from him.
I'm
going to make him a rich man,
but
I'm going to get this guy off the stage because I see he's a threat to me. And Don Cornelius shows me that behind this facade of this really smooth, you know, hey, behind all that, there lurks kind of a ruthless business guy. Hey, not only are you not going to buy my deal, but I'm going to protect my deal. If you can, elaborate on that story.
Yeah, that, which is really shocking because, I mean, he had tremendous power. Dick Clark has tremendous power. So But he realized early on, even when the show was local, that really modest show in Chicago, that Don had tapped into something that he had not. And so he attempted to buy even that local show, and Don refused. But then later, once the show really took off in L.A., he created a copycat version of it, and he named it Soul Unlimited. And it was on a network, which, you know, Don could not compete in terms of advertising dollars and paying guests and all that stuff with a network show. It had a black host, black artists, black dancers, and it was, you know, essentially the same format, except the host was not quite as cool as Don. The reason why it was a threat to Soul Train is because it was on a network, and so Don collected people that were power brokers in the entertainment industry and had meetings with him and kind of forced the show off the air. Threats of bad publicity and all that stuff, and I kind of go into detail about that.
Yeah, it's great.
What came out of it, I thought, was that the clean-cut image was very much an image. Like, there was very much something else beneath that.
No doubt. I mean, for both guys, really, if you think about it, it's like this. Because the first thing you learn in business is people, when it comes to money, people will hurt you. And so it's true. And so Don Cornelius is like, look, I'm protecting my baby here and whatever it takes. You talk about how he's got a tie in Chicago with Jesse Jackson. And at one point,
right.
you know, Dick Clark's like, they basically made Dick Clark walk away, didn't they? Dick Clark was like, he threw up his hands and said, that's enough. I'm not doing this.
Yeah. I mean, it would have made him look bad. So, yeah, it was a coalition of Jesse Jackson, Clarence Avon, who was at the time and still is in some ways very big in music circles. And he had connections with people at ABC. And so, yeah, they essentially, instead of fighting against Soul Train and kind of having a bad image, they just decided to drop the show altogether.
Which is incredible. I mean, when I read that, I'm like, wow. Let me ask you something. As we visit with Erica Blount Danois, the book is called Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train Classic Moments. Erica, when you first started out to write this story, did you know any of that background, or was it just stuff that, like, that's that anecdote right there? Was that something you found along the way?
That's what was most fascinating, particularly as a journalist, is that I just kept finding these gems. Started out, like I said, with dancers and finding out that they had done these incredible things outside of the show. And then all of these other stories just kept going. And like you said, the book started writing itself because it's just so rich. So many side stories to a show that for me was just something I enjoyed on Saturday mornings as a kid.
And here they were. And he's such a sharp guy. Don Cornelius says, again, he's looking at Dick Clark and he's going, you know what we need to do now is we need to get into some publishing. We need to start ourselves a record company. I need to represent some artists. And you talk about where he finds some of these people. He took a couple of them right off the dance floor, didn't he?
Yeah, which is brilliant in a number of ways. Because one, the artists that were on Soul Train Records, they got first dibs to be on a national platform on Soul Train, the show. So they automatically had promotional vehicle to showcase whatever their albums were. They created Shalimar, the group Shalimar, from two dancers, regular dancers that were really popular on the show. And Jody Watley was one of them, and she just so happened to be able to sing. Jeffrey Daniel was the other, who could not sing as well, but he could carry a note. And Jeffrey Daniel is also given credit for teaching Michael Jackson how to moonwalk. But the third member was Howard Hewitt of Shalimar. And they, Jody and Jeffrey, they had these routines where they were just the most popular couple to come down the Soul Train line. Sometimes they came down in roller skates. They had gimmicks and stuff and would dress alike. And Shalimar became, and still is from that time period, one of the most popular groups of the 80s.
The second time around is still a great jam from that time period. And, you know, another thing that you taught me with this book that, and I've got quite a vinyl collection. I love vinyl, and you can find stuff now. And if you look in odds and ends places, I found some of these Solar records, which that is a cousin of this whole Soul Train outgrowth, the way that whole thing came about.
Yeah, I've recently started collecting vinyl again myself. I'm trying to get into the internet and the iTunes, but I still really appreciate like liner notes and album art and that kind of stuff.
Hey, do me a favor, by the way. Stay out of some of the stores that I frequent. don't go beat me to the good stuff here. As Erica Blount Danois joins us, Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, and that Soul Train. You mentioned Toni Basil before, and I think people would be shocked to find out that her career essentially started on Soul Train.
Yep.
Another person I was shocked to see that her career came from this as well as Patrice Rushen.
Who knew that?
Who knew that?
Two of them. I love.
How did you learn that? How did you learn about Patrice Rushen?
Well, I watched their over 1,100 episodes of Soul Train, some that are re-aired regularly, but some that have only been seen that first run. So I watched a bunch of those first run episodes, and she was on an episode asking Bill Withers a question. I was like, is that Patrice Rushen? And somebody confirmed it for me, and she was dancing down the line, and So I just found it from one of the episodes, and she talked about how Don would come to various high schools to recruit kids. So her high school, which I can't remember offhand, was one of the high schools where they came, and she agreed to go on the show. So she was just a high school kid and had not really even become even an amateur musician, but being on Soul Train and being around other musicians to, you know, kind of move forward in terms of becoming a musician and thinking of it as a full-time career.
And what's wild about her, too, is that a lot of her fusion stuff from the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s, is, and even in the early 80s, you know, she wasn't what you would call like your typical funk artist. Like her music was a lot more involved, which you pointed out. And here she started with Soul Train, which was really wild. Erica, this book is really, really good. Interesting in so many regards, and we know how the story ends, but you make an interesting point about the story of Don Cornelius and Soul Train, in that the guy hasn't gotten his due through time, has he?
You know, the fact that I didn't know as much of the history as I did sort of speaks to the fact that the history of Soul Train was being underrepresented. So, yeah, I mean, definitely not what he did for the music industry, just that alone has not been celebrated in the way that it should. When the Grammys happened, he had just committed suicide, I think it was maybe 2 weeks before, and then Whitney Houston died a week later. Her sort of remembrance eclipsed him, so he didn't even get a real tribute on the Grammys, like maybe 3 minutes of mention.
Which is really crazy.
He's a huge figure in the way that Dick Clark was with Bandstand and giving people a platform, you know, musicians.
And what I think's interesting about his story is that those who know, know. And a lot of these artists from yesteryear and even into more modern times always appreciated Don Cornelius. But somehow the media, the press, he just became dated. And that's really a shame, because if even when Don Cornelius was older, he was still smooth and cool, but the health issues later on in his life, which ultimately I would term what happened with him was, from reading your book, he just couldn't take the pain anymore, could he?
That was part of it. I mean, he was at an age where he had had an aneurysm and had seizures periodically, and incontinence pain medication didn't work as it should have, and in other ways mentally he was also going through a lot, like I talk a bit about bitter divorce that he had gone through and just sort of, you know, being alone with the exception of his maid on a daily basis, and his son would come by periodically, so that may have factored into it. And he had one time been this figure that everybody revered, and that at some point he almost had become a caricature, and that people looked at him as this guy who, you know, used to have the afro and used to have the, you know, huge butterfly collar and the high heel platform boots and all that, and they couldn't see him sort of beyond that. Too, in part, he created that image, but, you know, when I had the chance to see him in Chicago, I don't think he was that cooler than cool person. And sometimes, I don't know if he was a celebrity per se, but sometimes people get trapped by the images that they create, and maybe he felt like he couldn't ever get outside of that Soul Train person either. And I don't know. I mean, you know, it could be a number of things, but
yeah, it's a sad ending to a story that otherwise reads like page turner. And by the way, I do want to say, Backbeat Books is the publisher of Love, Peace, and Soul, which of course was Don Cornelius's The Way We Would Sign Off, and we'll wish you love, peace. And by the way, behind the scenes of America's favorite dance show, Soul Train Classic Moments, Erica Blount Danois. Hey, on the way out here, and it's been great talking with you today on this segment, I do want to congratulate you on the book, but it seems to me that there's a lot of Soul Train that, and you said this before, this guy was a visionary. There are things that we...
Yeah, that I don't see that same kind of must-see TV. I mean, I definitely see you know, great shows on cable. You know, I'm a big fan of a bunch of different shows, from Mad Men to Breaking Bad and all those shows. But I don't see anything that, you know, responds to youth culture and kids doing what they do every day in the way that Soul Train did, and kind of having that cutting edge and great music and interviews and all that stuff all at the same time. They're talking about creating a new version of Soul Train and chopping it to a network, and, you know, we'll see. I don't know. Like you said before, the music industry is just in shambles. You know, I feel bad, like you said, for the kids nowadays with the music that they have, but who knows? Maybe there'll be a resurgence of some good music.
Well, you know what's funny? I mean, about music today, just as an aside, a guy like a Bruno Mars, you know, who's got this kind of, depending on what track you're listening to, but some of his stuff sounds like it's so 70-ish, and you can just tell he's grown up with an appreciation in Hawaii, where he's from, an appreciation for these types of sounds that we grew up with. So, and good for him for keeping that sound alive. But when you hear those records, when you hear them now, you just want to say to yourself, hey, back in the day, that would have just been another song that we heard. Now, today, it sounds like a masterpiece because it sounds so real.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And I don't know why that is. I mean, other than, you know, the record companies took the time to allow artists to be artists and groom them and all. I don't know.
It's weird. It's like, it's almost like we've become captive to the technology that exists today.
Yeah.
And I think we all have. And you make that point in the book about how it's so hard for us to comprehend this. Because if a younger person reads this and they'll go, yeah, I heard of that show. I'm going to pick that book up and we'll look at it. And they'll go, really? There was a time where there were only five channels or four channels. And, you know, and this guy had to shop this thing through the South. And
right.
get clearance through the South. Hey, let me ask you this on the way out. Is there anything else you want to add here? Anything about the book you want to touch on that I haven't? Say a final word here for us. And thanks again, Erica, for coming by.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Tony. You know, I just, like, you know, we talked about that, I just didn't really realize the cultural impact and the impact globally that the show had. It was just fascinating for me to find out all this information from, you know, even Don Cornelius being a producer and artist management and singing on some records in the Soul Train record collection. Like, just, it's just fascinating. And the precedent he set for cultural programming that exists today, like you said, you know, he hasn't really been given his due proper respect for all that he set the groundwork for today.
The late, great Don Cornelius. Erica Blount Danois, again, congratulations on Love, Peace, and Soul, behind the scenes of America's favorite dance show, Soul Train. Can you give me a Don Cornelius out the door? How would Don Cornelius close our segment today? Do you have a rhyme on the tip of your tongue today that you want to leave with us?
Well, you can bet your last dollar it's all going to be stone gas, honey, or we wish you love, peace, and soul.
A stone gas. Thank you, Erica. Great talking with you.
Thank you. You too.